Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of Living Hope, a weekly journey designed to provide hope, education, and inspiration for those living with pancreatic cancer, sharing the real-life stories of those really affected by this deadly disease and how they deal with it on a daily basis. And, well, we're going to talk about a whole panel of people who are going to help you deal with it here. Let's bring Robert in. What's that all about here?
Hi, Paul. Good to see you. And we have some sunshine today, so yay.
Yay. Wow. First time in a while, but don't speak it out loud or we might jinx it here.
I know, right? We better keep it quiet. Keep it on the down low. Anyway, I'm so excited to have Amy Reese with us today. Amy is the Director of Patient Programs with Hirschberg Foundation for Pancreatic Cancer and Research. And I think she's just got a promotion, so I want to congratulate her for that.
Thank you.
And what is exactly the Director of Patient Programs?
We said you two are sisters, but you're a little taller than Roberta, so.
I know.
Well, sometimes, you know, when they're twins, then the one always gets the tall gene and I got the short gene.
Okay, so, all right. You
know. Director of Patient Programs. So I'm the first contact with someone who reaches out to the foundation for patient resources or family resources. And then I oversee the symposium and barbecue and all kinds of patient events that we have throughout the year. So...
Yeah, you have a lot of fun events for, you know, especially for, I don't know if they're all always for survivors, but the ones I've been to have been mainly for survivors, and you guys really do an awesome job, so thank you for doing that. In fact, you mentioned the symposium, and that's really why we're here today, because we have a symposium coming up, and I believe it's your 18th symposium?
It is the 18th, wow. And that's on April 13th on the campus of UCLA at the beautiful Luskin Conference Center, where we've been for a number of years now.
And what is the symposium?
Well, the symposium is for, it's designed to bring together patients and families and caregivers with the medical community and basically share information that we think is important for the community to know. So it's no cost to someone attending, thanks to our sponsors, including Living Hope.
Oh, thank you
so much.
Thank you.
And the UCLA Department of Surgery. And NovaCure, and then a number of supporters, families, and trusts that know how important this event is to the community. It's to educate, empower, and engage is how I always think of it. So we educate the community in layman's terms on a number of topics, a lot of which we get from people who fill out our survey and evaluation form after every symposium to say what topics and subjects are interested in learning more about. So that's important. And really getting a group of pancreas experts to talk to us. And I'm excited to share with you all of our speakers and topics for this year.
Yeah, every year you guys do an amazing job. But why do you do a symposium?
Well, it's part of what the Hirschberg Foundation is all about, and that is bringing the community together and educating, because the more people know about this disease, the more that early detection is possible, the more of long-term survival is possible. So it's very important to Aggie and Lisa and the whole team at the Hirschberg Foundation.
And is this in person, virtual, both? But how does it happen?
Both. So in person, at the Luskin Conference Center, and then people can join virtually as well. And then everything is recorded so that when I talk to people later on throughout the year, I can send them links to all of our videos. So
they can go back and see a symposium from some time back as well?
They can, and we have a great topics and speakers from prior years. It's also on YouTube. We have a Hirschberg Foundation channel on YouTube where they can access all of our speakers.
Okay, and if somebody wants to register for the symposium, how do they do that?
Go to pancreatic.org, our website, and at the bottom of the page, it shows the 18th annual symposium. Click on that, and you'll see the program schedule for the day and be able to register.
Great. Because I do want to talk about your guests and really know what they're going to be, but for somebody new who's coming in, what can they expect when they first walk in the door?
Well, you're gonna get a warm welcome, and you're gonna get a name badge, and you're gonna get a little goodie bag, and grab a cup of coffee, and then go into the conference room and sit down and relax and be able to not only listen to the speakers but also get up and ask questions. after each speaker talks, and then we serve a beautiful lunch, and people can mingle and talk and get to know each other. What I love about the symposium is that when people first walk in, and I know most of the people that are walking in, and I know if they're newly diagnosed or if they know other people, but by the end of it, you see hugs, you see people exchanging phone numbers, email addresses, and it really is the engaging part of the event.
Yeah, it's something I've always enjoyed because, you know, you get to see other survivors and meet the ones that you've known for a while and also meet some new ones, and also the caregivers have a chance to kind of get together and compare notes and get advice and help. So it's really, the engagement is really, really important, and I thank you for doing that because it's something that we've missed, especially during COVID, and to be able to come back and do that is really awesome. So thank you. Tell us some of the guests you have. I know you have some amazing guests. I did look at a few of them, and you have some really amazing people. So if you can just tell us who you have and a little bit of what they'll be speaking about.
We do. Every year I look forward to listening to the speakers and all of the topics. But this year in particular is pretty special. We have a couple, first two speakers are also on our scientific advisory board. So we're really excited that everyone will be able to gather and be together for this. So what we try to do every year is a pancreatic cancer progress report. And it's wonderful to start off and share with everybody what's happened in the last year, what's on the horizon. And Dr. Eileen O'Reilly will be coming from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She's a clinical scientist whose research focus involves integration of molecular and genetic-based therapies for pancreas cancer, along with development of adjuvant and neoadjuvant treatments and identification of biomarkers for therapy selection. So Dr. O'Reilly knows her stuff, but she's going to review current state-of-the-art treatments for pancreas cancer as well as the genetics of the disease, and she'll discuss emerging targets, immunotherapy, and vaccine approaches that are in development. She's working on an off-the-shelf vaccine for pancreatic cancer patients who've already been diagnosed, and there are no evidence of disease, but every once in a while, the cancer comes back, and to be able to have a vaccine off-the-shelf for a cancer patient to be able to take is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I already want to ask you a bunch of questions about that, but I know we have to wait for the symposium.
To wait, but they're also at Memorial Sloan Kettering working on the mRNA trial where they take part of the tumor of the pancreas cancer patient, it gets sent to a lab, and a personal vaccine is created. And so that's in phase two of clinical trial at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and I believe throughout other centers around the country. So not only the personal vaccine she'll be talking about, but also this off-the-shelf that's being created. And that's a game changer.
Yeah, definitely.
So very excited to hear about that. Dr. Diane Simeone, who's currently with New York University Langone, but as of April 1st, she'll be with UCSD, the UC San Diego Moores Cancer Center. She'll be the director of the Moores Cancer Center. So we'll have her on the West Coast, which is fantastic. The university is very excited for her to be there. She's excited to be there as well, and she has a lot that I've been reading about that she's hoping to do at UCSD, and she's very hopeful. But she's going to be talking about PRECEED, which is the Pancreatic Cancer Early Detection Consortium. So she's developed that with others, and that's really for high-risk individuals to be able to be to get their blood tested, potentially have scans, and to be able to be in a database. The hope is to take that information and 10 years from now be able to brag about a 50% survival rate as opposed to 13% currently for 5 years or more for a pancreatic cancer patient. So they're hoping that with more information about early detection that will really move the needle for survival.
Yeah, I agree. It's something that's really important. We really need to get the early detection in there. So it's some amazing news you'll have, I hope.
Yeah, the PRECEED Consortium is an international collaboration of 50 centers to study a large longitudinal cohort of individuals at heritable risk for pancreatic cancer. So to be able to hear her speak about it and ask questions is going to be... UCLA has a program that they're about to start for PRECEED, And I'll be joining that since I have a history of pancreatic cancer in my family. My sister, who lives in San Diego, will be joining at UCSD. So they're at centers all around the country.
Just briefly, how can somebody find out more about this? Like, I have a high risk as well because I have many family members.
Yeah. There's a, if you looked up PRECED Consortium, PRECEDE.org, I believe. But if you just put in PRECED Consortium, you'll be able to go onto their website and you'll be able to see where the universities are, who's doing the study. And I'll know more about it after I join.
Yeah.
But certainly we'll know more after Dr. Simeone shares.
That's amazing. And I think Paul had a question. A
couple of questions came in here. First one I have to ask before I ask anything. What is a longitudinal cohort? You say that they're studying a longitudinal over some period wide something?
Long, yes.
Long, okay.
Yes.
I can't even say the word. Longitudinal? No, forget it.
Longitudinal.
Longitudinal. I'm going to add that to my vocabulary. All right. You so casually talked about a vaccine?
Yeah.
And this is already, if you have pancreatic cancer, from it reemerging? Not to prevent it from getting the first occurrence.
Correct. But, you know, you just have to imagine, Paul, what may be down the road, right? So
that's why isn't that front page news in the Wall Street Journal and everything else here? That's huge. If that's even in clinical, it's already in clinical trials right now?
Yeah. So the personalized vaccine had a phase one trial of, I believe, about 16 patients, and half of them had an incredible response to this personal, again, they take a piece of the tumor, it gets sent to a lab, they're able to create their own personal vaccine, and it gets put into the back into the patient.
So again, these are people that already have pancreatic cancer.
Yes.
But it's what, in remission, or it's not?
Well, we'll have to learn more about that. I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but I've read many articles and
keeps it from coming back. Is that the gist of it?
That's the idea,
right?
Right? So half of the people had a fantastic response to it. I don't know how many years it's been, but to be able to,
I didn't even know that was on the horizon. And the other one that Aggie always talked about, so when she was here, is, I don't know if that's any closer, is a blood test. She said she was, her group, you guys were funding some research or helping to, she wouldn't give us much about it other than that was in the works too somewhere.
Yeah, so those are various blood tests in the works where you or I would give our blood and they would be able to see if there's any circulating RNA or DNA to suggest that there's pancreatic cancer cells or other cancers within your body. That's still being worked on. It's not ready for prime time yet.
Okay. Because those would be, that would dramatically change the survival rate.
Yeah.
To detect it early and get to it through a simple blood test like they did with, we talked about on the show, prostate cancer used to be very deadly. And
right.
Now it's part of your annual checkup and people catch it early enough and then survival rates change dramatically.
Yeah, and it's still being worked on because let's say you find circulating cells, right? And it points to the pancreas because they can look at which organ it is potentially.
Wow.
I can't explain how they do that, but that's the idea. But then you have scans. So it's not just something, you don't get diagnosed with this test. You get alerted with this test.
Mm.
Then you go for scans.
You go look.
And let's say the challenge is, let's say the scans don't pick up on anything, but now you live with the fact that something is circulating, but nothing is coming up.
Right.
So those are sort of the challenges.
Nothing's grown yet, but it's in there. It's floating around in your bloodstream.
Potentially. Right. So again, this is early days, but the fact that there are companies working hard on these, they call them,
We call them miracles. Miracles.
You're not kidding. So the way you would get your cholesterol checked potentially in your blood one day.
That's what we're hoping for.
That's right.
Since I've met Roberta, she keeps harping on the fact, everybody keeps talking about low survivability. And when they talk about it, it's partly because can't detect it, can't see it through your pancreas, don't get it quick enough, don't get there soon enough. And then you're saying, even if you do get it, there's a potential in clinical trials, a vaccine that would help you from having it reoccur.
Yeah, that's what we're going to listen to Dr.
Wow.
O'Reilly talk
so
about.
I just had to, I had to put a emphasis on that because you said that so casually and so quickly, and those are mind-boggling things. Those are, you know, headline news around the world.
Well, here's the thing, Paul. I read all the time about what's on the horizon. I want something to be more solid.
Right.
Right? So it's not that this isn't important or it's not huge. I mean, this is why Dr. O'Reilly is coming out, to really share what's on the horizon and even what's in clinical trial. But like myself and Aggie and Roberta and everyone I know that's been touched by this disease, we want some solid, straightforward information about right. early detection and cure. So
this, anybody who has an interest in this or has pancreatic cancer or knows somebody has pancreatic cancer can come to this symposium for free and hear. There must be a limit to how many people you can feed or serve or fit.
That's right. We have about 150 people in person that are comfortable in the ballroom. So there's still room at this time.
Wow.
But if in case they are not able to make it, then the great thing is they will be able to go and see, watch it actually.
On a YouTube channel. Yeah.
So, and then contact Amy for more information and questions.
That's right. And they can also watch it, you know, in person, watch it at home.
Live streamed, right?
Live, and also ask questions live stream. However, if you're there in person, that certainly is...
Well, because you can go up afterwards and talk to them and say, really? Did you, what? Are you kidding me?
That's exactly right.
All right. I'm sorry to butt in, but that just seemed like big news that I had to call out here. All right.
It is. I hope I can back here next year.
And tell us it happened.
With confetti.
There you go.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
And right. We'll have confetti and...
And cake.
And Paul can vacuum it all up.
Yeah, I'll just throw it up in the air.
If you bring cake, it's okay.
Okay. All right. Vanilla. Dr. Herman is coming, and Dr. Herman is currently the medical director for histosonics and adjunct professor at the Institute of Cancer Research at the Feinstein Institutes. He is previously with MD Anderson and Johns Hopkins, but he's coming to speak about the Canopy Cancer Collective. And the title of the conversation is Improving Pancreatic Cancer Patient Care, Canopy Cancer Collective. So that's going to be an interesting conversation. We'll be learning about the health network of leading cancer centers that are part of this network. There are 14 currently NCI-designated cancer centers dedicated to improving care and outcomes in pancreatic cancer. So they connect top medical care providers, cancer researchers, and wellness specialists to formulate and foster best practices. UCLA is part of that, UCSD, UCSF, many other institutions. And really it's about how do we improve patient care and how do we share best practices throughout these institutions, which is fantastic.
I got to butt in one more time because we've did a couple of shows on that. Do they share well? Do they play well together, all these different institutions, or do they hold it to the vest because they're trying to get funding and research and whatnot, and we think this might work, and we want everybody to come here?
Well, in this case, I hear what you're saying, but in this case, it's about how to improve patient care. It's not so much a secret
sauce or a secret machine or a secret research.
Yeah, and everyone who joins should be excited to be able to collaborate and share information and have best practices potentially adopted across every medical center to help the pancreatic cancer family. I can't imagine why, you know, I'm going to sound like Pollyanna, but I can't imagine why there wouldn't be.
I can't either. And not just pancreatic cancer, we hear it all the time. You know, everybody's in their silo. And so I do my thing my way. Maybe it's not that I don't want you to know, but we're just focused on what we do. And there isn't a lot of cross-sharing of best practices or information.
Well, when you're talking about, though, patient care, I think it's something that everybody is pretty much on board. At least in my experience, what I found is I have sometimes, I say, too many doctors, but they're all on board with, you know, what's happening
right.
and trying to provide the best care for their patients. So
that's exactly right. I you know, that's my experience, and I'm, you know, meeting some wonderful doctors. And no, I think if anyone joins this, it's for the good. I can tell you about collaborating, Aggie, with our seed grant program at the Hirschberg Foundation is now all about collaboration as well. So she's always been about share whatever information you have, get out of your own lab, and let's work together to make a difference. So that's where I'm coming from. Paul.
Me too. But I've just been startled, not just pancreatic cancer, but again, they get in, networks don't share it too well with each other for whatever reason. They don't have any mechanism to do it or any motivation to do it. I don't know what it is, but I don't see different hospitals cooperating.
I think what we're seeing, at least with pancreatic cancer, is because I think they're finally realizing if we don't share, we're not going to make any changes.
Right.
And nobody wants to see, you know, us continue and or go on a downslope where we're going back to only 4% or 5% are surviving. So I think we are seeing big changes as far as in the pancreatic cancer community with doctors and researchers sharing information.
And even with the UC centers, there's a UC pancreatic cancer consortium across the UC campuses. So UCSF, UCLA, UCSD, and two others. And there's a group to share information within you know, the North-South five universities. Mm-hmm. So I think that's changed over the years, and I certainly hope so. I hear more and more about consortiums, collaborations, so.
But even that's just within the University of California system. So you've got five or six different campuses, five or six different hospitals, research centers and stuff. I mean, I don't know if they're cooperating with University of Michigan or something, or wherever I went to school or something.
Yeah, well, the APA that I go to every year, the American Pancreatic Association, you know, hundreds of doctors, scientists, clinicians sharing the latest information with each other. So I see a lot of collaboration. I see a lot of generosity in sharing their information.
Maybe it's just my negativity then here. Maybe it's much more pervasive than I think it is here.
Yeah, I've seen the changes just from when you know, first diagnosed to now, and there is a big collaboration of getting together and sharing the information, because that's the only way we're going to find anything with this disease to fight it and to beat it. So I'm seeing an improvement.
Which is why you got to go to the symposium, because you're
going to
hear people share information. That's what I'm getting at here, right?
Paul, we need just the positive energy.
Yeah, I think you're doing it right. A good positive energy.
So if you can just try to get on our bandwagon.
On your wavelength there.
We would be very happy.
I can get off the negative bandwidth.
That's right.
We'll get them there. We're slowly getting them there.
I mean,
it's improved.
Me and the rest of the country
here. The last
here,
couple of years, we've been able to get them slowly into the positive.
Okay.
So we'll get them there.
Okay, let's speed that up, Paul.
All right.
Mariana Niles-Swiller is from UCLA, is going to speak on genetic testing for pancreatic cancer. We haven't tackled this since 2019, this topic. I mean, we have through webinars, which is terrific, but to really get this group together and share is important that we circle back. So she's going to answer the question that many individuals impacted by pancreatic cancer ask, genetic counseling and testing. What is it and why does it matter? She'll address the importance of knowing your hereditary cancer risk assessment in the setting of a personal or family history of pancreatic cancer. And having this crucial information may inform treatment decisions in addition to helping family members understand their potential risk and screening options. And Roberta, so you would have been probably at the symposium when Wendy Conlon last year in 2019.
Yes.
But we don't know if there are any other new mutations that we should be aware of that have been discovered through genetic testing. So I think that's going to be fresh.
Roberta always says knowing her genetic history, her family history, is what forced her not to just accept this was something else and to push, hey, why don't you keep looking at pancreatic cancer? Because my mother had it, my dad had it. And the doctors kept saying, don't worry about it.
Yeah, and I think if we can find, like for mine, I mean, it's been a while since I've done it, and I need to redo it now because things have changed, but it had been so inclusive, they weren't able to really tell me anything, but I think it's important to still go, and I know a lot of people, they don't want to know, and I sort of understand that, but I don't, because, I mean, I want to know, that doesn't mean you have to beat me up about it all the time, but I want to know so that maybe if I'm going to make a life choice decision, then I know, okay, maybe I don't want to do this, or I do want to do this, because there's a greater chance that it could affect, you know, pancreatic cancer, or even with my, you know, my family and my sons getting the genetic testing done, just to have an idea, just so you know, okay, maybe there are some things I can change about my life that maybe will help.
That's exactly right. And that's part of the whole education, to empower us to make informed decisions. So, and I know for you, you've gotten up and asked questions at the symposium on behalf of your family. And that's a generous, beautiful thing to do. Some people just don't want to know. They don't want it in the back of their mind. I'm not one of them. I've gone for genetic testing. I'll go again every handful of years just to understand a little bit more because of my family history. And knowledge is power to me. So
exactly.
I don't understand the camp that doesn't, but especially when you're a high-risk individual, to be able to share that with your children, your cousins, your, you know, your whole family, I think is important.
Is it expensive or painful or difficult? Is there any other barrier that just other than I don't want to know?
I think it's more just psychological, and also just knowing that the information is important. And also it's not just about pancreatic cancer. Someone can have pancreatic cancer in their family, but then someone has ovarian as well and breast cancer and or prostate. And oftentimes that tells a story that's important to know. So it's not just about pancreatic cancer. So then the genetic counselor will be able to dissect that information and give you a little bit more of an overview of concerns.
We should get a genetic counselor in here. I didn't know there was such a position. Somebody that, I guess, is trained how to evaluate this.
Oh, yes. I can give you a couple names.
Yeah, that would
we'll
be cool.
That. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Let me move on. Shelby Yuschenko spoke last year. She's our registered dietitian at UCLA. She's an advanced practice registered dietitian who specializes in complex gastrointestinal conditions. She leads the Nutrition for Safer Surgeries program and supports a division of digestive diseases for patient population at UCLA Health. She'll present on pancreatic enzyme replacement therapy, what it is, when it's needed, and how to take the medication, and common misconceptions. And she'll also review diet patterns for pancreatic cancer and how they may impact your enzyme dosing regimen. This is really important. The amount of people I speak with who have no idea, who've not been recommended enzymes and are having a real hard time with digestion, Shelby will be able to give and share a lot of information.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's been a guest on Living Hope, and she's really amazing. But yeah, I think this is really important because mm-hmm. when I was diagnosed, I was given the prescription, but not told what to do with it. And then they tell you, take it with meals. Well, what's a meal? Does that mean everything I put in my mouth, I have to take one of these? Or it was so confusing that half the time I didn't do it because I just couldn't seem to figure it out. So
yeah,
this is really important. So I'm really glad to see her come back and talk about this.
We also have a great page on our website, pancreatic.org, on Shelby sharing information about enzyme education. But this will be great. Again, any of these presentations I have, I can then share links with people down the road, and they can get educated way beyond April 13th on these subjects. Okay, who's next? Eden Brower, also from UCLA, is going to be talking about survivorship in pancreatic cancer. I don't think we've ever covered survivorship. So no. It'll be interesting to see all that she'll cover. Basically, she's sharing that presentation will provide an overview of cancer survivorship and new trends and directions in cancer survivorship care. She'll discuss the unique physical, psychosocial, and spiritual aspects of survivorship experiences of patients and families in the context of pancreatic cancer and how this can inform comprehensive supportive care. So this will be an interesting new topic for us.
I don't think we've ever discussed this before. Yeah. So.
And I think that would, you know, I can only imagine you can share what it is to survive so many years after being diagnosed and how that affects you. So even if you think the cancer is in your rearview mirror, it's still right here, right?
Yes, it's always there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You try, you know, not to think about it, I think. And there are days I think I do forget.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, and I've talked to other survivors too, and sometimes, you know, like the little tummy ache will come back or something will happen and you're like, okay, do I need to be concerned, or is it just like what everybody else gets as well? So there's a lot that goes into surviving that you don't really think about every day, you know?
Yeah, and I can only imagine the PTSD of having those feelings again, those physical feelings within your body and saying, uh-oh, or this is nothing.
I think for myself, because I still have my tumor, even though it's dormant mm-hmm. and it's not able to get to at the moment, but thank God it's just laying there, and it can lay there as long as it wants and do absolutely nothing. I'm fine. But there is a lot, because it's like when something happens, like I said, I feel like I'm living with a time bomb because I just never know. So I said there are many times I can just kind of forget. But then when something happens, in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, now do I need to mention this to the doctor, or do we just wait and see, kind of, you know, let it play out and see what happens? So there is a lot that goes into it. And I had never really heard. I've heard people, you know, experience that and talk about PTSD at the same time. When you're thinking about somebody in the service, you know, you don't think about, you know, as other people going through illnesses and stuff, suffering that same thing. But you do, and it's just not something I realized until it was actually brought out. So maybe they can give us a little bit of information on that. And
I see you at the mic asking a lot of questions.
I know. They're going to tell me, would you sit down, please? Or no. just let it sit at her table.
No, every time I see you get up and ask a question, I'm thinking, oh, good. Roberta's going to ask a question that's going to be important for others to hear the answer to.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
So now, I hope we have time to discuss a panel.
We've got 5 minutes. We'll give you 5 minutes here. Okay.
Thank you, Paul. The panel, which is always how we end the symposium, which is perspectives from survivors and caregivers. Jenny Tran is coming back from Sims Man. Jenny Tran, PhD, and she'll be moderating. So it'll be two survivors and two caregivers as usual. And let me share about the four. One I've already talked to prior to starting this and this show, and that's Julie Lope. Julie was in her 60s, got the news about being diagnosed. I think she had just finished a triathlon or a marathon, which is not so unusual to hear that someone's in the top physical peak right. of their life and then they get a diagnosis. Julie went into her diagnosis with an unusual attitude, and that is it was her understanding it was a 3% survival rate at the time. And instead of focusing on the 97%, she thought, 3%? I'll be part of the 3%. And that's just so beautiful and refreshing to hear because I think that really helped her along the way. So 19, 20 years later, Julie will be up on the panel sharing her tips and she emanates light. She's just a beautiful soul. We'll also have Tom Arai, a survivor, who I think has been on this program, diagnosed stage 4. He's a survivor of 8+ years. I don't know when he hits number 9, but he will be talking about his journey as well as the two clinical trials that he's been involved with. I think it's important to highlight clinical trials and hope that people consider them as well as standard of care treatment. And Tom did something similar to all the extraordinary people I know like yourself, which is his doctor said... His doctor was connecting him with other patients to share his story, and he said, I have to give back, and started a weekly support group. So that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward. I didn't realize Tom was going to be there, too, so that's really, And he does, I believe it's on Friday mornings.
It is.
That they do that, and I haven't been able to be on for a while, but I want to come back, because I really do miss speaking and seeing all the other survivors.
Yeah, And so this is unusual. Tom's wife, Tony, will be one of the caregivers.
Oh.
We've never had a husband and wife, partly because we want to make sure that the survivor or the caregiver has a chance to really tell their story in their own way. But this is after talking to Tony, who had volunteered to be on the caregiver panel, she has so many insights into how to support your loved one, and really some ABCs of moving forward in a positive way and making a difference. So Tony could have the hour by herself, but she won't. But I basically said to her, you got to pick out the top 10 things that you're potentially going to talk about, or the top 5, because there really is so much practical information that she's going to be able to share. Ray is our other caregiver. He's, I believe, our first son. His father had been diagnosed. Was at that point there was a 5-year survival, 5% when his father was diagnosed, and he said his father made it 10 years, and he has great information to share as well. His father was living out in Las Vegas. He made sure he came back to Los Angeles. He ended up being treated at UCLA, but he'll focus about getting your medical team together and also what it's like as a child of supporting someone with this disease. So it's a great, great panel.
It really is. And I mean, just going to hear the survivors and caregivers speak is worth it on its own. But just you have so much other great information that really I can't encourage people enough to go sign up, register. If you can't, register for the virtual, because it's you won't miss anything. I mean, it's just a great thing, a great program. And I really appreciate you, Hirschberg, doing this for so many years and appreciate you, you know, coming and speaking again about it, and just so much information. I wish we had more time, as always.
Oh, we can take more time.
Well, I think Paul's giving me the signal here, so I think I better wrap it
up. We're done. But we're never done, though. This is a great conversation, and it's a continuing. There's so much to digest in there. Tell us where to go to sign up to get tickets.
Pancreatic.org.
That's it. That's simple.
It's that simple. And click on the symposium page, and you'll be able to see registration. And when we're at capacity, we'll let everyone know. But for right now, there's still availability.
But yeah, and the date again is?
April 13th. It's a Saturday.
April 13th. Yeah. Okay.
And at what time is we? I don't think we gave a time.
We check in as 8:30, and we begin at 9 o'clock.
And it's all day or half a day?
It's 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock. With two breaks and lunch.
And we wish it really could go longer, because there's a lot of information and a lot you want to talk with a lot of people and just get everything. But it doesn't happen, unfortunately. But we want to thank you again for...
Bring her back as you get closer.
Yes.
We'll give her another shot at the bite at the apple here.
Thank you, Paul.
But we appreciate you coming. And I want to dedicate today's episode to Julie Lope and also Tom Arai. They both have very amazing stories, and it's worth just coming and connecting for nothing else, just to hear the survivor and caregiver stories, but especially the survivor stories. It's something we need to hear more of. And we thank them for being part of the panel and for sharing their journey, because it's not always easy. So thank you, Julie and Tom Arai. And thank you, Amy, for coming down and being with us. We greatly appreciate it. And to the Hirschberg Foundation, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. One more reason to tune in each and every time to Living Hope, weekly journey designed to provide hope, inspiration, and education for those living with pancreatic cancer. Sharing the real life stories and the real information that you're going to hear at symposiums like this. And if you or somebody you know needs help soon, today, try that number, pancreatic.org, place to find out more. Go to symposiums, connect with survivors, and see what else is out there in the world of pancreatic cancer these days here. For everybody here at OC Talk Radio, thanks for joining us. Hope you will consider passing this along to others, and hope to see you at that event coming up, the symposium.